from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattada! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman here, talking Syracuse-Clemson on Saturday, the biggest game of the weekend. You cannot convince us otherwise until this Clemson-Syracuse game comes to a conclusion, and then we can all put our brains into full Super Bowl mode after. A good weekend for Syracuse sports fans can relax, catch a game Saturday, catch the biggest game on Sunday, and we've got a fun episode ahead with a little bit of a twist from our special guest interview today. So stay tuned for that one, because it just goes to show that in a news-oriented podcast, a news-oriented career, you never know when duty calls, and that is exactly what happened. Stay tuned, because it's a funny moment, and we'll give you all the details coming out of the break. We did talk with Owen Watterson. He is the Sports Illustrated writer for Sports Illustrated All Clemson. Does not cover Sports Illustrated, covers Clemson basketball, and a lot of good insight, because as Ben and I will get to throughout this podcast, we don't know what to think of Clemson, and as you'll hear from Owen, either does he. So no one really knows what this Clemson team entails, but we'll do our best to sort of break it down here on the podcast for you on the Ostrom Avenue Pod. Follow along with us at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. We've had some fun over there, and the picks are starting to heat up. Ben caught another point back against me, so we're getting close. I'm at 17-7. Ben's at 13-11. So at least now, regardless, we're both into the above 50% range. So overall, good picks for the podcast. Cannot complain about that. And maybe if Ben sneaks a few back, we will really have a heated race down the stretch of the ACC. So Syracuse-Clemson, 2 p.m. on Saturday. It's an interesting game, because it's sort of strength on strength. Syracuse's offense has 100% been better than its defense here in this season, and Clemson's defense is really something. So it's going to be a strength on strength matchup, and a tough matchup for both squads to be able to sort of hold the other team's best asset in check.
Yeah, Amir Sims is a problem. The thing is, though, last year Clemson beat Syracuse in a one-point game, in a game that I think a lot of people around the 315 thought the Orange should have won. And it wasn't Amir Sims. It was Tevin Mack, who is no longer with the program because he graduated. And so it's you know, a weird ground here where Sims is the guy you're worrying about. But last year you shut him down pretty well. So maybe it's don't focus so much on Sims, like pay your due attention to him. But there's a lot of other people in the mix that can really do damage if you zero in too much on one guy.
Yeah, I was just watching the highlights of that last year's matchup going into this game and going into this episode, and I just sort of had a moment like, how did they lose? What happened? Like, obviously, you know how they lost. You know the end with Trapp hitting, you know, a cutting two for the win, but they were up three down the stretch, and that was part of a stretch where Syracuse was sort of losing its handle on a couple of games that they really were in the driver's seat for, and then fell apart down the stretch. And it's a tough one when you look back at last year's situation and definitely a game they would have wanted back if there was a tournament played that could have easily bolstered the resume a little bit. But this year, as you were saying, it's a different team with a different guy. And that man is Amir Sims. And he is probably, I mean, I'm going to say probably, he's the best player on this team, leads the team in pretty much every relevant statistical category. But the thing with Clemson, as I was saying earlier, is their defense is really something. And it makes up for, you know, outside of Sims, who's averaging, what, 12 and a half points a game, it's a pretty lackluster Clemson offense. And that's one of the biggest issues that you sort of see with this team.
Yeah, it's a weird defense, though. We're going to keep going back to not completely understanding this team, because they rank really highly. According to KenPom, they're the 14th best team in the country in defensive efficiency. But you look over the last 2-3 weeks, there's been some really, really bad spots. Virginia, 85 points allowed. Georgia Tech, 83 points allowed. Florida State, 80. And Duke, 79. But then you turn around and limit North Carolina to 50, and you do the same to Louisville. So, you know, three-point shooting, I think, has really hurt this team, and that's a very basic thing to say in today's brand of basketball. But you look at a team like North Carolina, they're going to go inside a lot more. So I think Syracuse, if they can hit their shots, which has been the biggest if of this entire season, can expose this defense, because teams who have shot the three well, at least recently, have gotten to the Tigers' defense pretty easily.
Yeah, and it's going to be something that you're not really sure what you're going to get. And that's been the narrative all year surrounding, you know, Syracuse's three-point shooting. When you look at the schedule, when you look at their stats, when you look at the sort of game-by-game aspect of things, Syracuse is very hit-or-miss from three. They shoot, you know, under 30% in the majority of their games this year. And then there's a handful of games that you circle when they go off, and obviously those are your big offensive performances. You look at the Rider game, they shoot 50% from three. BC, they shoot 52% from three. Georgetown, they win and they shoot 43% from three. Like, there's some sprinklings of unreal three-point shooting performances, but at the same time, there have been some miserable days. You think of the second time they played Pitt and they shot 13% from deep. They shoot 11% from deep against Northeastern. And so this team is going to need to show up and be able to shoot against this Clemson defense, which is really solid. And it's sort of going to be that odd balance and that odd sort of situation for the Orange, because when you look at Clemson on paper, they're a small team. And unfortunately, we got cut off with Owen Waterston a little bit. I wanted to ask him a little more about the defense and how they sort of are such a strong defensive team, number 14 in KenPom's defensive efficiency. And their biggest player is 6'8". Their starting lineup goes, I think, 5'10", 6'2", 6'2", 6'8", 6'8". It's a small lineup, but they hold their own defensively. And, I mean, they held a UNC team that's one of the best in terms of bigs, not only in the ACC, but in the country, to 50 points. So they've got something up their sleeve, and they're able to play sort of a bigger game when they do, in fact, lack size at the four and the five.
And I think it's just about forcing tough shots, because you look at it, they don't get a ton of blocks and steals. And it's, like you said, a defense that doesn't necessarily have a big rim protector. Sims can protect the rim, but it's not, you know, a hulking guy getting up near 7 feet tall. It's a 6'8" big man. So that's not necessarily shot altering for every player on the floor. They're just keeping people to their spots. They play good team defense. And that's something that frankly is pretty tough to beat. If you're Syracuse, you have to try and not settle. And I think that's an issue that the Orange have. I think they settle pretty often, as people who get angry at 30 footers from Joe Girard would remark. So, you know, I think not settling is a big key for Syracuse. I also, you know, this is a big claim, but I'm going to say it. I think the Clemson defense has gotten a little lucky. They're still very good, but teams have shot 65% from the free throw line against them. Like, that's top 20. That doesn't make any sense. That's like top 20 in terms of worst. So, you know, I think making your shots at the line is big for Syracuse, because, you know, the difference between a lot of ACC games can be one or two free throws. Clemson only beat Miami by a point. and they beat NC State in overtime by 4. Louisville was a 4-point win. Then they thumped North Carolina. So, you know, I think it's, you know, it's getting the right shots and not leaving points on the board, which teams have done so far against Clemson this year.
There are sort of two other things, and they both have to do with the three, one more pertaining to Clemson, one more pertaining to Syracuse here. Clemson, they don't shoot the three well. They are the worst three-point percentage team in the ACC at, what, 30.9%, I think, or something along those lines. They are not shooting the ball well from three. And in conference play, they are shooting the ball 29.6% from three, which is tough for them because it's a team that shoots a ton of threes. 43.5%, 44% of their shots are three-point attempts. And to shoot that many threes and not shoot the three at a great clip sort of leads to the inefficiency that they've had offensively. They've got one of the worst effective field goal percentages on KenPom, obviously just doing a sort of KenPom dump here. But these numbers, when it comes to the three, and you look at the correlation of those three stats, like, this is a team that shoots a ton of threes and they don't make them. And because of it, they're one of the most inefficient offenses in college basketball. But when you look to the other side, they do so well defensively. And it's sort of a weird balance that I'm not sure where things are going to fall, where Jim Boeheim's going to fall. On Jim Boeheim's show on Thursday night, talking with Matt Park, he mentioned in sort of the Joe Buddy Kadari debate slash conversation, talked about the value that Joe and Buddy add in terms of stretching out opposing defenses. And I don't know how that'll sort of fit in against Clemson. Do you want that defense to be stretched out, or do you want your best ball handler, your best attacking the rim guard in there? So I'm really interested to see what Jim does with that situation, because I think that this is a Clemson team that could be hurt a little bit by stretching them out defensively a little bit, but they're also a very, very smart team defensively. And Brad Brownell has got a very, very solid defense that could throw a lot of curveballs at Syracuse if they don't have, you know, much to offer from beyond the arc.
Going back just to the Clemson three-point shooting quickly, I think they have some streaky shooters. Like, they chuck it up a lot, and I'm not sure if they're just if Clemson just feels it can shoot better and that's why they continue to shoot, or if it's they feel they're being pushed sort of into, you know, the new age of basketball where you need to shoot so many times. But they shoot a ton for their percentage. There's no doubting that. And it goes back to Trapp, you know, a guy that burned Syracuse last year, not only on that game winner, but he hit 4 threes. He hasn't hit more than 2 threes in a game since then. So it's, you know, if the right guys show up on the right days, this Clemson offense can be a problem, but it just hasn't happened enough. And then to go over to Syracuse, while I usually champion more Kadari, I've for the better part of 2 months said he should be in the starting lineup. I'm going to side with Jim on this one. I think because of the height advantages Syracuse will have, going inside and out isn't a terrible idea. You go inside to Quincy Guerrier if you create space by stretching out the defense. If he's playing well, then keep feeding him because he can really heat up as we've seen this season. And Dolezal has had some great scoring games as well. Then Clemson has to press in a little more, and that's when Buddy and Joe start to hit threes. So I think while in most situations I would go with Kadari, I actually think on the defensive end, Syracuse can handle without Kadari. And I think that they'll succeed better playing a little more inside and out basketball on the offensive end rather than all the drives to the net that Kadari produces.
We're going to stay on the threes, but I'm going to bring it back to Clemson here. It's sort of just a mix and match, choose your fighter with the three-point conversation here. Ben's talking SU Clemson. I was talking SU Clemson. We'll go back to Clemson here for one more sort of quick hit to just sort of continue the what is Clemson basketball conversation, because they're good, then they're not, then they're good, then they're not, and no one really knows what the situation is. As a team, they shoot, you know, 31% from three overall and below 30% in ACC play. But the weird thing is, you look at a lot of their three-point shooters. Nick Honor shoots 38%. Clyde Trapp shoots 35%. Hunter Tyson shoots 37%. They've got guys that can shoot the three, but just as a team, they don't do well. And it's because a lot of these other guys are throwing up shots, and it looks like a little bit of just sort of non-conference play and some minutes that are some lesser minutes and people not shooting the ball well could sort of be tossed into the conversation. I don't really know the situation with it, but Clemson plays a lot of guys and they all just sort of come in and test their hand. And if it works, then it's good. But a lot of them sort of come in and you see, hey, can you shoot today? And unfortunately for them, the answer has been no a hell of a lot this year. And so that's why their numbers are so bad. But it's going to be interesting to see where that balance falls, because as we know, it's so valuable to be able to shoot the three well, and so many teams are going to get increased open threes against the 2-3 zone. So can Clemson take quality threes, or are they going to sort of see these half open threes that the 2-3 leaves you with and continue to chuck? That's going to be one of these major keys for Clemson offensively. We've talked a lot of Clemson on our own. So we'll give you guys the info from the Clemson specialist here. We caught up with Owen Watterson about 20 minutes ago to talk about this Syracuse Clemson matchup on Saturday afternoon. And here is where we got in the interview. We now welcome on Owen Watterson. He covers Clemson for Sports Illustrated, All Clemson. And we've got two Owens, one Ben here on the podcast. And we are breaking down the biggest game of the weekend, Syracuse and Clemson, Saturday afternoon. Owen, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, guys. For anyone that doesn't know, is literally 2 minutes before I hopped on this call, I got news about Trevor Lawrence having to have surgery. So this was a bit rushed. But I'm excited to talk about this Clemson basketball team, even though I do not claim to understand them, because they are one of the most confusing teams I've ever watched in my life.
I was going to say, to open things up, I was just going to keep it simple. Are they good? Like, what is the situation with them? Because I can't seem to get a grip, and I don't think anyone can really get a grip on what this team is. Three really good quality wins, and then obviously you lose 4 of 6 over the last, you know, half month, and you start to question what you thought you knew.
Well, the whole issue with this team really started at the UVA game, right? They were 9-1 going into that game, and their only loss up to that point was a 6-point loss to Virginia Tech on the road, I believe. So a lot of confidence going into this game, and before the game had started, they had just had everything, all basketball activities paused because of COVID-19. I believe it was 9 or 10 days that they were completely out of basketball. And then they go into this UVA game after a break and they get beat by 35 points at home. So that really started to change everything for this team. There was an obvious loss of confidence, not just from the players, but it looked like from Brad Brunell as well, because the interesting thing about this year and why I say I don't claim to understand the team is because I've never seen a Brad Brunell team like this in my life. Usually their problem is that they start playing well way too late in the season. So this year they start 9-1. Everybody's super excited. They're an obvious tournament team. And then you get that loss and then two more right after it. And then you come right back and then you beat Louisville. And then right after Louisville, you go to Cameron Indoor with a chance to win there against one of the, you know, worser Duke teams in most recent history, especially, and a chance to win there for the first time in God knows how long. To beat them for 2 years straight, actually, they beat them last year at Little John too. But regardless, you go and get beat by 26 points and then come in the most recent game and beat North Carolina at home. So this team, I would say they have potential to be very good, especially if they hit their stride and start playing well before the tournament starts. But other than that, I really couldn't tell you too much, because they're as confusing as can be.
How have the coaches and players talked about stoppages? Are they also, like you are, attributing, you know, a COVID pause to a loss of momentum this year?
Yeah, there were a couple players, Amir Sims in particular, that said that, that pausing activities, not practicing, no games after starting as well as they did. Again, like I said, something they're not used to doing, in a spot they haven't been in, none of these players on this roster. So they did attribute a lot of the most recent lack of success, I guess, lack of wins, lack of performing well in general to that COVID-19 pause. But it does seem, I really like the UNC win And I think they got a lot of momentum moving forward, but the COVID-19 thing was attributed by the players and the coaching staff as a reason. They kind of lost their mojo.
When you sort of look at that three-game stretch, obviously the defense has been outstanding this entire season, and then you go three games in a row allowing 80-plus points, getting blown out in all three of those games. I think the closest one was 18 points. Was it the pause, or were there other sort of defensive issues that you saw coming up? What was the sort of the reasoning that the world went crazy for them for a little bit?
I really think the confidence that these players lost matters a lot here, because a lot of these guys, Amir Sims in particular, who has a chance, I think, to do some good things against the Orange tomorrow in the high post. And we could talk about that in a little bit, but in particular, man, I'm trying to find the right words to talk about this team. I know I'm pausing a lot, but comparing them to anything I've seen before, it is very difficult. You guys get what I'm saying?
It is. It's so weird. I think everyone sits in that same boat where no one really knows, you know, what this team is or who they can become. And, you know, obviously you look at a team with the three wins that they've got on this schedule, with the Purdue win, a Bama win that just keeps looking better and better. And then that Florida State win early in ACC play, you think they're so good, but then you see, when you look at sort of the KenPom sheet, all the red of recent, and it just sort of throws you a little bit of a curveball. So we'll sort of let you get into that with Sims. I know you just hit on it a little bit. If you just sort of want to talk about the matchup that you sort of see Sims being for this 2-3, is he going to be the guy that you think they'll throw up in the high post to sort of be the facilitator?
Yeah, because Amir Sims, when you look at this roster, is leading the team in points, rebounds, and assists. No guard. It's Amir Sims in the post that is leading this team, and has been the best passer, honestly. So if Brad Brunell can get him situated inside the high post to make some plays on the outside, but he's not going to be able to do much out of that post if the shooting isn't there, right? This team has not been very good on the inside when they've won. It's been attributed to the three ball. And I think they're going to have to do that again tomorrow if they want to make a difference and try and win this game and get positive in ACC play.
It's interesting because, you know, Clemson doesn't shoot a great percentage from three this year. It's not bad, but around 30% from beyond the arc. So who steps up and makes threes against the 2-3 zone?
I think it's going to have to be Clyde Trapp, man. Clyde Trapp had a great game against North Carolina. Didn't look so good against Duke, but that's the whole team, right? When one guy goes well, usually the rest of the team goes with them. You look at a lot of the bad losses, no one guy for the most part stood out. The stats were around the same, especially in points. But man, this Cuse game, I think it's going to have to be Clyde Trapp. Nick Honor, I think, could make a difference, especially from the corners, if they can get him set up there and running off of DHOs, moving around a lot. But the defense, honestly, I think is going to be more important to Clemson to win this game, because the defense, they're 106th, not, excuse me, that's offense. They're 14th in the NCAA in points per game allowed.
So that ended a little bit abruptly, and we have no issues with Owen Watterson whatsoever. He is a fast friend of the program here. We really do like Owen. We love the conversation. As some of you might know, as he talked about right off the top, there was some breaking Trevor Lawrence news, and he covers not only Clemson basketball, but also Clemson football. And Trevor Lawrence is having surgery, and there's some surgery news. And so he was already at a little bit of a panic with that as we started the conversation. And then he got an important phone call regarding some big time NFL quarterback news. And that's when we lost him. So sometimes the news does what the news does, and that means that you're going to have to bring a journalist away from his Zoom meeting for a little bit. So we got a good amount out of Owen, and we will have him back on probably, unfortunately, past my time here on the podcast. So Ben is responsible for bringing him back on come football talk or football season or whenever. He's a good guy, covers a lot of sports, covers a lot of Clemson stuff, and we would love to have him back on when he gets the chance. But yeah, as we said, sometimes the news has a mind of its own, and that's where Owen went. So we didn't get all of our questions entirely answered, but still a very fun interview and a fun little story to be in the middle of. And Ben and I sort of sitting here wondering how long we were going to get him for. And I think we got, what, 8 minutes out of him. So still some good conversations. And he brings us into a conversation that Ben just brought up. And we circle the last six games for Clemson. They lose 4 of 6 in that stretch, obviously. Blowout loss to Virginia, blowout loss to Georgia Tech, blowout loss to Florida State, a close win against Louisville, a blowout loss to Duke, and then a decent win against North Carolina. We don't know what Clemson is based on that stretch, and Owen Watterson didn't know what they were based on that stretch either. But Ben just sort of turned the table here and brings up a good conversation. Who is Syracuse after this last 5-6-game stretch when you look at what Syracuse has done? The back-to-back losses, North Carolina is a close loss, the blowout loss from Pitt, and then you blow out Miami and Virginia Tech, you lose in blowout fashion to Virginia, and then you get a close game win against NC State. So we posed the question to Owen Watterson. Now it's time for us to answer the question with regards to Syracuse. Ben, who is Syracuse at this point?
It's hard to say. I'm going to have to make a determination, but the easy answer would be, I don't know. I mean, we talk about that stretch. You go from North Carolina to North Carolina State. That's almost 3 weeks where every game was more than a 15-point margin, some in the favor of Syracuse, some not in the favor of Syracuse, some ranked wins, some ranked losses, some unranked wins, and some unranked losses. You know, you go back to Pitt, that's probably the low point of the season for SU. Yes, Justin Champagne is back. No, does that mean Pittsburgh should have beat Syracuse by 20 points? I think a lot of people coming into the season thought Syracuse was better than Pittsburgh, Justin Champagne withstanding. So, you know, that's pretty bad. You beat a Miami team and it looked better then. You know, the Hurricanes now have dropped to 2-10, I want to say, in conference. So that's not really that valuable of a win. Virginia Tech's the high point of the season. And then UVA, you know, I don't think losing to UVA is bad. I think losing to UVA by 23 points is pretty bad. And NC State, a game that most people thought Syracuse would handle easily, considering the Wolfpack had arguably their two best players not in the game, goes right down to the wire. You know, if I have to answer who is Syracuse, I unfortunately think Syracuse is the same darn team that we've been watching since, like, the restrictions, since the penalties were imposed on the school. It's this team that wins games they shouldn't win and loses games they shouldn't lose and sprinkles in a few expected results in the middle. It's kind of just same old Syracuse. It's a team that makes Joe Lunardi's head scratch every year and either sneaks into the tournament at the last second or breaks your heart when they lose in the first round of the ACC tourney and takes themselves out of contention for March Madness. I think it's just same old Syracuse. That's the best I got.
And Elijah Hughes said this week that, or not Elijah Hughes, excuse me, Quincy Guerrier said this week that Syracuse needs to win out to be in the tournament, which I don't think is entirely the case, but it does sort of put you into perspective of where the team's heads are at. And they know they're on the outside looking in and they know they need to gather some wins. But at this point, you said you don't know and then gave the answer that it's the same team that it's been. I think that's the case. I'm going to say this team is a coin flip, and Syracuse basketball for the last half decade has been a coin flip. Some days they show up, some days they don't. Sometimes it lands on heads, sometimes it lands on tails. And that's sort of where they've been this entire season. They've had games where you're like, wow, this team really does have it. This team has got, you know, tournament capabilities, upset capabilities, can be in the upper echelon of the ACC. And then they've got games where you question whether or not Jim Boeheim still knows what he's doing because of the way the defense looks or the way the team plays. And it's been the situation for Syracuse for 4 or 5 years, as you've been saying, since the sanctions, since Mike Hopkins left, since the program went into the crapper because of what? A couple of paid players at the YMCA and a cheating essay or an essay written for a player is what I think they got him for. And you're telling me that North Carolina does the same same investigation and they can't find anything? I'm digressing here, but here you go. It's been the issue that Syracuse has had to deal with and come back from, and it's been a struggle. And every time you sort of think that this team is figured it out and you know what they are, boy, do you not. Because I think when you saw this 6-1 team going into Pittsburgh, you thought this team was great. And you're like, you know what? It's a loss to a quality Rutgers team who, my God, has looked terrible, but also looks decent. I don't know. There are so many teams in college basketball. I don't know what their identity is. I don't know what they are. And then, you know, you're 6-1, then you lose 3 of 4, and then you pick up 2 dominant wins. You think Syracuse is back. And then that Virginia game happens. You narrowly grab a win against NC State without their 2 best players. I don't know what this team is. I hope for the sake of our coverage, for the sake of the team, that they can pull some wins together and be in a conversation come ACC tournament time. But they're going to need to win a handful of games in, what, the last 8 games of the year. They got to probably go 6-2, maybe 7-1 to be safely into the tournament. I'm going to say 7-1 to be safe before the ACC tourney, which is a big ask, but I mean, fortunately for them, the ACC sucks, to be brutally honest. The ACC sucks. So these games that typically would be, you know, murder games on a schedule, you circle Carolina, you circle Duke, you circle Louisville as almost auto losses. They're a bit more of a toss-up this year, and Syracuse is going to – I said they are a coin flip. They're going to have to win some coin flips down the stretch to be comfortable come tournament time as well.
You beat me to the punch. I was going to ask you about the record thing after you mentioned Quincy. But, yeah, so there's 8 games left. I may as well give my prediction as well. I also have the 7-1 prediction to make the tourney. I think 6-2 with strong play in the ACC tourney could do it, because we sometimes forget, you know, if you beat Louisville during the regular season or Louisville in the ACC tournament, it doesn't really make it much of a difference. And if anything, people actually notice the wins later in the year. We always have this weird conversation of, does it matter if you beat a good team early in the year? Like, obviously it does, but there are 8 games left. I may as well break it down to not completely say the same thing as you. I see 4 quality wins here. I think Clemson is a quality win. Any team who's beaten Purdue, Alabama, and Florida State is a quality win. Louisville, I see as a quality win. Duke and North Carolina. NC State would be nice. I don't think Notre Dame's like a bad win. Georgia Tech also is like a decent basketball team. I don't really see Lunardi really caring too much if Syracuse beats Boston College again. So, you know, I think losing to North Carolina twice would be really bad. Like, that one, I don't think you can lose. Clemson, I don't think you can lose. One of Duke or Louisville, I think, can be forgiven. Arguably both. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of reality, because I think we do sleep on the value of the Georgia Tech a little bit, but 7-1, I think 7-1 is probably the safest way. If they go 7-1, they won't be the last 4 in. I think they'll be like the next 4 in.
It's something, I don't know. It's so weird to look at this. And even when you've gone a season talking about how bad the ACC is, it's so weird to go through this 8-game stretch and sort of wonder where the quality wins linger. And obviously, you know the top 4 out of that group with Clemson, Louisville, Duke, and UNC, as you were saying. But fortunately for the Orange, I mean, outside of BC, there's not like an awful loss in this remaining stretch. But you've got to win. You've got to be able to win against teams that you haven't traditionally beaten outside of what, the first year of being in the ACC or the first couple of years of being in the ACC. You've got to win 2 of 4 against the upper half in terms of the 4 that you've mentioned, the 4 that I mentioned. You've got to win 2 of Clemson, Louisville, Duke, and North Carolina. And I think you've got to win that North Carolina game, as you were saying, Ben. Show that redemption trail. And you know what? We're humans. We've got recency bias. So you can overlook the earlier season loss to UNC if you can get an upset win against North Carolina. And KenPom, Mr. Pomeroy's actually got, I think he's got Syracuse winning that one, 74-72, for whatever that's worth, inside of, you know, we're a month away from that game, and KenPom's given Syracuse a 2-point win. So we'll leave on that happy note for Syracuse fans, that KenPom thinks they can beat the Tar Heels and get that redemption win against one of the best big man squads in college basketball. Big game this weekend for Syracuse, though. This Clemson game is absolutely massive. It's one of the biggest win opportunities for Syracuse. They're without a quad one win. This is not a quad one win, I don't believe. I think it's a quad two, but they need to grab this win because, you know, a quad two win at this point in the season is going to still go a long way. You need to get that, and you've got to be able to roll with it. And it's do or die for Syracuse. There are going to be a lot of do or die type games and season saving games down the stretch for the Orange. And that one is at 2 p.m. on Saturday, countdown to tip off, 1:30 over on WAER.org, 88.3 FM, the WAER app, wherever you want to listen. We don't judge where you listen as long as you do listen. Once again, countdown to 1:30, our coverage going until 6 o'clock at night. And keep it locked on Twitter with us at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Ben's doing his best to claw his way back into the battle, and he's gained a point back in back-to-back showing. So there is some life in the Ostrom ACC picks category here. Once again, at Ostrom Avenue Pod, we'd love for you to follow along with us over there. And we've had fun content. We've got a lot of fun content. So keep it locked over there. Maybe, you know, turn on tweet notifications on, and then you get the best of every one of our late night thoughts or whatever it might be. So for Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Stay safe.